12:30. So, why don't you guys go ahead and get started?
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
We're going to start. I'm Brian Munch. This is Dave Young. And this is Anthony Rushetsky. All three of us are senior electrical engineering majors. And we have all worked in some capacity with our sponsor, AudioPack Technologies. And what we're trying to do is a test fixture that we'll be able to substitute for a paper test that we currently use at the company. And I'm going to start off with Dave talking about some of our project description.
Go ahead. So right now we have a test at AudioPack that's standard among all communications companies. And what it is an intelligibility test. It gauges how well a communication device is able to transmit a voice. In a soundproof room, there is a person with a mask or some sort of voice amplifier, one of our products, that sits in a chair and reads the phrase, circle the word blank. And they say a word that is on a list. It looks a lot like that. Now, 5 feet away from that, there are listeners, anywhere from 1 to 4, that sit in a chair with this exact sheet and decide what they think they heard. So in one question, it would be, circle the word pan. And the choices for the listener would be pat, pad, pan, path, pack, and pass. So it can really figure out how well the device works. Now, to make it more difficult and to simulate a hazardous situation, there is a speaker on the ground that gives off white noise, kind of like a hiss in the listener's ear. So that just complicates it even further. Currently, we use a paper test, like here. Very, very time-consuming to grade. And it actually takes about as long to grade as it does to perform the test. Very annoying for an extensive test. Sometimes we run tests that go 8, 12 hours, just like hundreds and hundreds of words. Absolutely ridiculous. And it's bad enough to have to do the test. Grading it, even worse. We thought we'd make an electronic box, you can see on the bottom, where it would display the words on the screen, and you would have the option to select one of the many words. Using the LCD and a PIC chip, we would control it and store the memory to later be interfaced with a computer. Now that I've given you an introduction to what we're hoping to do, I'm going to pass it off to Anthony and let him tell you what we have done.
Like he said, since this is in the R&D phase, we decided that what we wanted was a PIC chip. PIC chip necessarily needed analog to digital conversion and ample storage for the 50 words that the test runs through. So we wanted to make this user-friendly, have it a box that will be able to store all the 50 words that the user will listen to and determine based on the test. We're going to also interface this PIC chip with an LCD screen, like so, but this isn't the one that we want to use. We need one with at least 4 lines, as shown in the previous picture, where it has 2 columns of 3 words each, 6 buttons on corresponding to each word, and then a word count at the bottom so you don't lose track of where you are in the test for the 50 words. So if you miss a word, it will show up. You'll know that it's not number 37, it's number 36 on your LCD screen. And we also want to make it have 2 reset buttons, so where you don't accidentally hit one, say the test gets scrapped for some reason, the speaker cuts out, and it's very, you can listen to the amplifier very easily. We want 2 reset buttons, so you don't hit one and it resets. You want to hit both of them, so it's an error-proof method. And since this is in the R&D phase, we want to get these two parts working in our box, and then everything from that, the program and everything, will sort of fall into place. And with that, our plan, I'll turn it over to Brian Munch.
I don't know. One of the things I forgot to mention is that the company we're working for, AudioPack Technologies, is a communications company. And they manufacture this type of voice amplifiers for hazardous situations, like for firefighters or for military personnel. And this is an integral part of their of selling all of our products, so this is something that would be very beneficial to the company. So this is our project management plan. As you can see, the completed tasks are in red. Everything else is yet to be done. So far, we've managed to stay on track, but I mean, we're still in just the design phase, so that's pretty easy. We've been able to purchase several of the main components so far, or at least decide on them to what we are going to purchase. The three major milestones we have for verification purposes are obviously to display some type of text on the LCD screen. And that's our first one. I'm not sure where that's at exactly. The next one would be to store the user's response in some type of flash memory. That could be the PIC chip if it's easy enough, or some type of compact flash card or whatever. And then finally, our major verification will be to actually just substitute the test, or substitute our fixture into an intelligibility test. And if it's, you know, a seamless transition, then we would consider the project to be a success. So with that, are there any questions about the project?
Yes.
Yes, Bob.
You're showing that you have not gotten your research control programming.
Oh, I don't know how up to date this is. Yeah, it's a little behind, so we have been researching. We decided to go with that particular pick that we showed on the previous slide just because it has enough memory for both user response and program memory. And it also can do everything that we need to, analog to digital conversion, and directly interface.
So the answer is it's just something you haven't
done. That's right.
Not that it's a big stumbling block.
No, I think I just threw this on here when we started a couple days ago.
Well, you shouldn't say that.
Yes, never say that to me.
You just fell on the sword.
I can update this and I'll get back to you.
That's right.
No. You're working so fast that the...
That's right.
The maintenance plan
will not be upgraded. We're exceeding our expectations.
Okay, but seriously, any questions or any comments? One of the major purposes of doing this, which hasn't been done in other semesters, is so you all know what other people are doing. Some of you are going to find out that you're going to have commonality. Thing you might, you know, several of you might be using text. That means that you might actually be able to help each other, or you might know of solutions that other projects to problems that other projects are having. So fire away. We don't have much time, but it looks like we'll get 2 minutes.
How do you score the? Like, how you, can you read this data from something, or how do you score the results?
That's something we were going to deal with later on down the line, and we figured you could just read it as, you know, store the user's response as an array and then just compare it to whatever randomized test that you originally started out with.
What's the advantage of doing it in this discrete electronics format versus just writing a software program and running it on a PC?
When you do this test, you sit in a room, and sometimes we have as many as 4 listeners or 5 listeners, and there's no way AudioPack is about to drop 5Gs on 5 laptops. So people can sit there and take the test.
This will cost maybe $40 or $50 instead of $5,000 to make this user-friendly. And it's a test that is used widely for any communications company, so it's something that's going to be very useful.
That's also the way things are done at AudioPack. They just like to make test fixtures. So they're really happy.
Yes. Was there one last question back there? No?
Okay.
Hey, what's wrong? Do you see any risk? That's going to be a standard question for everyone.
Right now, one of the risks we see is obviously the memory issue. But I think one of the things that helps is there's a ton of documentation online for ways to interface some form of memory with the PIC chip, or just using the PIC chip's memory in and of itself. So that helps a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Once we interface it with the LCD screen, the code will sort of start to fall into place, because we want to get that working first rather than the memory.
Okay. Now, the way we're going to work it today is Norman, who is doing co-op, has no interest whatsoever, and we have, that is, in the order of presentation, so we have numbers in a box. And he randomly picked 3 next, which is Mark. Are you ready to go?
Wait, is there a laptop cable, or do I need to put it on screen first?
whichever way you want. You want to do the CD, or do you want?
It'll take like 30 seconds to burn.
Or you can plug in right here. Okay. Actually, what we will do, I think, is maybe get one team setting up while we do the Q&A. So more than you get the picture, another one. Let's say who's the winner or 13. I don't think we actually have. Yeah, that was a bad number. We did like 13. There's a couple bogus numbers. Oh, white one. I put the numbers in there. Okay, we got a 12. Let's see. Oh, that was rhyme test. We already hit them. 17. That's a legitimate number. That will be e-parcel. So e-parcel, you're going to be next. How are you coming along here?
Just setting it up.
Okay. As I said, this is something new, so we'll have a few bugs in doing it. Okay. Oh, yeah, you're pushing. That should be coming up. You need to press your output. Turn on your video. What is it, F something?
I can put it on the CD really fast.
Actually, this might be faster. Did anyone else bring a laptop to show theirs? For some reason, we seem to be having a laptop problem. There you go. Hopefully, I gave you one that's formatted okay. Worst comes to worst, try another one. Okay. That was a real old technology one. I think that's like a couple of years old.
Oh, wow.
Let's see if this one's better. No, that's doing the same thing.
This.
If it's not going to work, we may just move up with the e-parcel and let you burn it.
Well, it's burning right now, so it's
okay. Technical difficulties. Yeah, these are supposed to be identical and working fine, but since everyone uses them, you never know what's going on. Okay. Some work and some don't. No, it still should be okay.
Yeah.
But that might be a problem. But it wasn't switching over, and we've had video problems before. Yeah, don't put your machine where it's going to fall. There. Okay. That'll be much better.
And it does.
Okay. Yeah. In fact, you might just want to copy some other two, one full pair of there, and then I'll make copies of them all after.
Okay.
In fact, we're trying to sign this up. Later, I want to copy this. Did you copy it?
I did it.
Okay, Mark, why don't you go ahead?
Okay.
Okay, Mark.
My name is Mark Bell. I'm in ESIS 399L. This is my second semester senior project. I'm working on the asthma monitoring system. And my tech advisor on this is BJ Hottam, who's a master's student. The research that I'm doing is to design an interface for University Hospital's asthma research. What they're doing is a prolonged asthma research, but what they're doing right now is switching from the old style of pressurized inhaler to the new discus inhaler, which has a blister pack of medicine in it, which as you prime the unit to pop the blister pack, and then the person physically inhales to suck in the medicine. But what they need to do is make sure that people are actually inhaling this medicine, not just advancing the unit and dumping it out, or various other ways to kind of get around it. So there's a need to monitor the usage of the asthma inhaler but the problem is we're not actually allowed to physically alter the discus in any way due to the FDA regulations on this particular unit. It's already been passed, so if we alter it in any way, that has to go through a whole other round of testing and all of the stuff that they really don't want to spend the time or money to do. I'm working with BJ Hottam on this, and he's working on the computer interface, the power supply, and other things like that. My responsibility on this is to design the airflow sensor, which we'll be using to ensure that a steady inhalation is actually being drawn through the unit, as opposed to either an irregular tapping or no inhalation whatsoever. So currently, we have requested several samples of different types of sensors, a flexible, sort of like a leaf spring, but it's a flexible sensor, and some pressure transducers, but we've generally been denied on those, so we're going to go ahead and purchase a few for testing purposes. And then for the chassis design, which is going to clip on the unit itself, the concept work has been done. But Advair, who manufactured the discus while supplying us with demo units, is not willing to supply us with any of the engineering measurements on it. So we're going to have to go ahead and take those ourselves. That's going to be the next step. And right now, this is kind of where we are. We're a little behind on the measurements of a human airflow through the Advair, so we can then calibrate our sensors. But other than that, this week we'll be starting on the design and prototyping for the sensor units. We don't have the sensor units themselves yet, so we're going to have to kind of design around those and then integrate them when we get them. I think the next step is actually going to be working on designing the chassis in SolidWorks, which will have a modular interface to the human interface in the front, so that after we design the sensor, just kind of clip it on the front, especially since there's going to be multiple people using these chassis, most likely. So the front sensor is going to have to be replaceable just because people are going to be putting their mouths directly on it, and that creates all sorts of health risks. So
what's the suction measurements?
The suction measurements is we're going to have, there are a few people that we know who have these and use them. And we're going to find out how hard they're and how long they're generally inhaling for to dispense this medicine.
Okay, but when are you going to get a chance to do that?
That's what we're going to be doing this week. We were delayed by a few outside factors, and so we'll be stepping up this week to take care of some of the background.
All right. Okay. So your risk is getting the pressure sensors, and the workaround is you're simply doing the chassis while waiting for the sensors.
Right.
Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Any questions?
Yeah.
What's going to keep somebody from dumping out the powder and then inhaling nothing?
The way we're designing it is that you have to physically prime the unit to pop the blister pack, and that's going to put the pressure sensor into kind of detect mode, and then if it detects kind of fibrillation or nothing in particular, that's what it's going to record. Because generally what happens is you prime it and you immediately inhale on it. It wouldn't make much sense to prime it and kind of leave it on the counter for 10, 15 minutes. So if there's a prime and then a fibrillation, that's going to count as a false dispense.
Have you thought about maybe putting it like tilt? So you have to dispense it with the unit. The unit has to be flat.
No, it does not. The unit, you can tap it out by doing like this. You can inhale it. You can inhale the medicine in pretty much any direction. The other problem with the tilt switch is they're generally mercury-based, which on a medical monitoring system is... So, in the back.
I'm just curious, how big of a problem has it been that people don't want to inhale this stuff? I'm thinking, like, yeah, I'm asthma attack, I want it.
Actually, let me answer that, because this is for a research project, actually, at Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital, and the whole idea is just to monitor when children take it, and it's part of a long-term statistical study. So it's not really to find out necessarily when you're having attacks, but it's a statistical thing.
Plus, the medicine that's being dispensed here is a twice-a-day kind of preventative medicine as opposed to an emergency inhaler. Yeah.
What kind of airflow sensors have you been considering?
We're trying to keep them small and sort of unorthodox, just because they're going to be cheaper if we kind of work around it. So what we're looking at now is kind of a maybe an airflow tap with a very small pressure transducer, alternately maybe a kind of a strain gauge that is either partially in the airflow or deflected by the airflow passing across it.
Have you considered hot wire type sensors?
Not particularly.
Might take a look at that, or using a PTC thermistor as a hot wire type anemometer.
Well, the only problem is that it's going to be right at their mouth.
Right. So, and that's, I was thinking that, you know, a hot wire would be good just simply because it could be really cheap.
Right.
And there's ways you can baffle it or whatever you need to do to make it safe.
Okay, well, you guys can talk about that offline. That's actually a good idea. Usually, hot wire, I tend to think of as very low-level electronics, and that might boost the cost up. So, but talk about it offline. Okay, e-parcel.
While e-parcel people are setting up, let me just make mention that a week from today and a week from Wednesday, we have 2 days for project reviews. So it's going to start on next Monday and next Wednesday. Frank has a sign-up sheet on his door.
Unfortunately, it's rather low, so you'll have to stoop.
Right. So your team picks the times during any of the hours during the day on Monday or Wednesday. There'll be no class next Monday. There will be a class a week from Wednesday. Miranda's going to talk to us. But next Monday, no class. Pick a time for your group to sign up on. It's on Frank's door.
And, so you can get ready, random number generator next. Now, if we had it working, we could use that to figure out who's going next. Okay. So whenever you guys are ready, in fact, just copy your presentation over to the hard drive. There's a folder on the desktop for because everyone's having the same problem.
Where do you want it?
All set?
Where do you want it?
There's actually a folder right there you can get into. And if worse comes to worse, you can email it to me later. That's not a big deal. Okay.
Looks good.
And keep your eye on the clock.
Oh, yeah. Hi, my name is Aaron Trackman. This is Matt Zimick. We are both computer engineering majors, seniors, and we are doing eParcel as our senior project. What eParcel is, it's a way of sending large file attachments via email. Large meaning, here we have listed 650, 700 megabytes plus. Really, it's anything more. Anything larger than the normal file attachment. So I think max some email things use is like 10 megabytes, so anything more than that. And the way it does this is it implements a protocol that was designed last year by Jessica Fitch and others called the eParcel protocol. Very easy. And it uses very heavily XML and stuff like that. And the way we are implementing this is using Apache Tomcat, which is a web server, and Axis, which is a framework for making web services. What we've done thus far is we've gotten, you know, Tomcat and Axis both running and working properly, and we have the implemented a program, the eParcel JWS, which stands for Java Web Service, and that's basically a quick and dirty way of deploying a web service on the Tomcat, on the Axis web server. It's based, all a JWS file is a Java file with a changed extension, and Axis just knows what it is after that. What we've been working on lately is the syn and fin command, which are in the eParcel protocol, and just really too much to get into at this point with the presentation. What we personally are working on are the just the web server, the web service. The client itself is, we are only implementing a very basic client to just for testing purposes, basically. A larger, a more robust client will be developed at a later time. Currently, we, here you can see our chart. It's a little hard to read, but that's okay. We are currently in the prototype development stage right now. We are actually right on track. Our plan is to have the prototype completed by early next week. The reason for that is that there is a time constraint. There is a class, Professor Libertor's EsusFork 23 class is going to be making a client for this web service, and we need to have it up and running by next week so that they can start working on it. We are doing quite well on that thus far. We need to do a lot of work in this week. It'll be pretty good. And that's pretty much it. Is there any questions?
Do you foresee any risks? Like maybe the class will totally screw up in the testing or something?
They're just making a client. It won't really be affecting our implementation at all. That's why we have a rudimentary client just to do, you know, our own testing. But they shouldn't be able to harm what we've done at all. It's going to be very separated from that.
Okay. Now, who's going to collect the feedback from the class? Is that going to be you or Professor Libertor?
I'm pretty sure it's Professor Libertor, and
okay,
also...
Because you didn't have that on there.
No. Oh.
Or at least I didn't think it was in there. You know, who was collecting the feedback?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. It was on the first page. I think I forgot.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's Professor Libertor. And mm-hmm. along with Jessica Fitch, who is a student, PhD student, who we are also working with.
How do you know that you're on schedule with your prototype development?
Well, we have a lot of the functionality completed already.
Like?
It's difficult to explain without getting into the details of the actual protocol itself, but we have a bunch of the different commands in the protocol. There's a get protocol, a send protocol, a get command, a send command, a mail command, all these different things that are all implemented in the they're all described in the RFC that describes the protocol. And we have a lot of them implemented thus far. We still have a few to go and then work and then...
Do you think you got more than maybe half done?
We have about half done, I'd say, right now.
Okay.
Okay. Any questions?
So, yes.
Is there anything... like this eParcel service already out that you can use to
Store new file attachments? Not that I actually know of. I mean, there are things like, you know, you can use AIM to send a large packet, large file. This is different than that, though. The way this is going to work is that you send an email, just like you have the client program open, and you just send it to their normal email address, and then it gets to them, and then they open it up, and it basically streams it from your computer to their computer. So it doesn't take any, you know, and there's nothing really like that using a web service at all.
Does this get around those, like, mail, or, like, the corporate firewalls or whatever
they are? Yes, it will, because... It will, because it doesn't actually go through email, per se. You're just using the email as an identifier for the other person, if that makes sense. Assuming, of course, that the firewall at the corporate place doesn't block the port that we're using.
What port are you using?
What port are we using? No, like 36. I don't remember. I'm sorry. It's actually, we just picked a random one. We don't really know. That's something we need to, it's not, for testing purposes, again, it's not all that important, but later on we'd have to actually pick something that was more specific.
Okay, very good. Okay, let's see. Did we pick the next one yet? Oh, yeah, we're
talking.
Lab view flow. Okay. We're getting more worried. Yes.
Oh, we've never done it.
Hi, our group is doing a random number generator that uses electrical art. The group members are myself, Charles Larrabee, and Kelly Haley. And our technical advisor is Frank Merritt. The idea behind this project is that we're making a hardware device to make a very random string of numbers, which could be used for like data encryption or picking parties for a raffle or something that requires, you know, very good random numbers. So the idea is that we have this spark gap that runs a Tesla coil, runs a really high voltage across the gap, and the spark has the option of going in two directions that should be, you know, equally desirable because of the distance, but because of the composition of the air inside that space, the idea is that the spark's going to randomly decide to go to one place or the other, and then we're going to have a couple of sensors that pick up where the spark's going, and if it decides to go left or if it decides to go right, the photodiodes pick that up and send their response to a comparator, which decides high or low depending on where the spark lands, and then a computer samples that and creates a random string.
So far, we've done our design concept and project proposal. Obviously, it's pretty much our own heads. We've also begun research on other random number generators and comparing the quality of that to what we are trying to do, which is still in progress. And we're also still researching tests to verify the randomness of our number generator that we're trying to create, which is also still in progress. And we have designed the prototype of the actual spark gap device as far as how we're going to place the electrodes and how we're going to house it. And we've been discussing our sensor and comparator circuit design, but we're still in the beginning stages of that. And this is our updated plan. I've had to move a couple of things up. I gave us a little more time for research than we had initially planned for. and just bumped up a few of the things right after that as far as patents and designing the comparator circuit. We were a little delayed on that. We missed one meeting that we were going to have to start doing that. Next, we'll be looking to find a good sampling method and computer analysis program to sample and create the list of random numbers. And we'll be purchasing the hardware and beginning to build and test our prototype after that. So we're more or less on track.
Okay. Do you envision any risks with the project? This is a real standard question for everyone today.
Because we're using such a high voltage, we have to make sure that we have the sensors an adequate distance away or somehow shielded so that they won't become part of that electrical circuit. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our biggest, and it poses somewhat of a safety risk for us too, I guess.
Okay, so you have a physical risk.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably fire hazard too.
In your research so far, has anything surprised you?
I was kind of surprised that it was like a problem to begin with, like that it is apparently from everything that I've read, it is very hard to make a good random number generator.
Who is doing the other physical random number generators? Are these universities or would the CIA or the National Security Agency even talk or publish anything?
I don't really. The main one that I'm aware of is a group that runs a page at random.org, and they use a radio antenna.
The white noise one
that they sample. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I don't think they actually sell a product, but I think people will request like a CD full of a string of garbage that they send them and people use it for all kinds of stuff. Not usually security, since it wasn't they don't know if anybody's copied those numbers, but. Apparently, it's a pretty successful project.
Okay. Any questions from the audience? A whole bunch.
What's the benefit of doing it in hardware like this as opposed to just all software based?
I don't think it's really possible to do true software random number generator because you got to have some algorithm to make the random number, which you can't by definition. Can't really happen, I don't think. So, yep.
Do you foresee any problem with the arc changing the conductivity of the air, making it not random?
Oh yeah, that's the whole idea is that the air is gonna turn into like ozone, and that's gonna make the air more conductive. But it's as soon as that break happens, the molecules start dispersing and they affect the other areas of the gap as well. So just by the idea of like the molecules are always moving around randomly at room temperature, so it should be very random.
Is the air around the gap going to be enclosed or is it going to be free flowing with the?
We'll probably leave it open at first, but not where it can. We probably don't want a draft or anything, but we're going to try leaving it open first.
I think we're probably going to eventually try enclosing it also and see what kind of differences that makes as far as like is it going to use up all the normal air and is it going to create some really weird stuff going on. So.
But I'm curious, like how hard is this?
Probably like this big.
How many bits of random data per unit time are you expecting to get?
I don't really know. Maybe I think the Spark runs at like maybe 100 or 200 hertz or something like that. I don't know if we can sample it that fast, but the photo guides have like really really fast response time, like 80 nanoseconds or something like that. So I mean, optimally, maybe 100 hertz or something.
Yeah. Do you see any issues with manufacturing the gap itself and having the, I'm not sure if it's like exactly the same distance apart from the spark point, or how you know whether you have one bias or not, and therefore messing up the randomness?
Yeah, that's something that we haven't really figured out yet.
We haven't actually built anything yet, so we need to see like how much tolerance we have for error, as far as that's concerned. Probably not much.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you need a copy of this?
Yes, in fact, if you could just copy it over to the desktop, and we'll take
sure.
it from there.
Sure.
Okay.
Norm, another number.
Let's see which group that is. Tire temperature pyrometer. Okay, I knew you were here somewhere. Yes. I had problems with them on, so hopefully yours will be better. But I have old sheet ones. Oh, okay. Yours is working. Okay. That's great. That's what you get when you get the ones on sale. So you can go ahead and get started anytime.
Hi everybody. My name is Ahmad. This is my partner Imran. We are working on flow temperature control, and our technical advisor is Professor Farouk.
Okay.
For this project, we are using a device called QTS-12, which is purposely manufactured for students to learn more about process and control. This is the device at Olin 711. You can see here there are many parts. Then the important one is the condenser. Okay, the condenser is basically a large glass tube that has a glass coil inside it. Okay, and the hot water will go through the inner coil of the glass, inner coil of the condenser. And then, at the same time, the cold water will go through the condenser and surround the inner coil. Because of that, the heat exchange will occur, and then the heat from the hot water will be transferred to the cold water. And then, as the result, the water at the cold water outlet will have a higher temperature compared to the water for the input. And the goal of this project is to design a user interface to control the temperature of the output water. Okay, this user interface will be designed using a software called LabVIEW. The software is from National Instrument. Okay, for this project, we have subdivided it into three main phases, and the first one is the calibration of sensors and actuator. As you can see here, we have like four water inlet and outlet, and at each water inlet or outlet, we have a sensor that will measure the temperature of the water, and then after measuring the temperature, the sensor will send a signal in terms of voltage to the computer. Then to calibrate is to adjust the computer to give a correct value corresponding to the voltage in terms of Celsius or Fahrenheit. It means changes in voltage should give a correct value in Celsius or Fahrenheit. The second phase is to develop a mathematical model for the whole process, and then we will use that model to simulate to verify the validity of the model, and with this, you'll be done using a simulink. The next step is we take the model and implement a new one, a new implement a closed loop controller. And then for this project, we are going to use a proportional integral derivative controller of PID. The controller should be able to re-stabilize the output, the temperature of the water at the water collar, at the cold water outlet, when we apply disturbance to the system. The disturbance can be the change in the valve position or change in the flow of rate flow of water. The valve will be used to change the rate of water, boiling water.
To date, we didn't have many progress. We just managed to get a computer equipped with right here and data acquisition card. We'll be using a PCI 1200 card. And since we never used LabVIEW before, so we need to familiarize with the LabVIEW environment and familiarize ourselves with the device, QTF 12.
What, you never used LabVIEW in engineering 210?
Just for the first lab.
Okay.
Because it wants to involve their data acquisition card and...
Yeah.
Yes. Just check, since I wrote that line. Just check.
Okay.
So for our project management, the yellow line here indicates where we're at right now. So we are supposed to do three things, which is represented by the green mark, which is familiarization with the LabVIEW and the device, and the data gathering. Since we didn't really integrate the computer and the device yet, so we are not able to do the data gathering. So we are a little bit late in the progress here. So in order to rectify this deviation, we will be spending more hours this week to make sure that we are able to finish the data gathering on plan, which is on 7. And we also have a 2 days extra there, which is represented by the red color there. And this should give us enough time to finish the data gathering accordingly. Our next task is by today we should be able to fully integrate the data at the device and the computer, and after that we are ready to do the calibration.
Okay.
Any questions?
What is the red box for?
The red box is just want to show that we have 2 days extra.
So you put in a 2-day vacation.
If you can see that between tasks, each task we have like a break, so that in case we have a...
This is interesting.
Yeah.
Either that or you get a break. Okay.
Yeah. You got built-in makeup time.
Yeah. Okay.
And the risk that I can see now is because we are using a computer, and it's lab computer, I'm not saying that the computer is not good, but in case it's broke and then we don't have the data, so what we plan to do, we have to frequently backup all the data. And the device itself is a glass, so you have to carefully not to break the glass. So that's pretty much.
You talked about the word calibration, that you were going to calibrate. I don't see any of that up there at all.
Yeah, which task is the calibration in?
So there's a milestone somewhere out there when you've got enough data gathered that your calibration is finished. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay. Will that be done then on October 7th or
9th?
Or is it going to show up elsewhere?
You got to say 9.
What I'm interested in is what do you anticipate that you're going to have in the way of a technical completion by the time you write your interim report? Yeah, you're not going to have started your model yet, is what you say.
Yeah.
You don't get to that yet, but you're going to have something in preparation for your model, and that's not clear to me of what all that is.
As we said before, we have 3 phases of this whole project. There are three The green one is the first, the blue is second, and the red is the third one.
Yeah.
The internal report is this one.
Yes.
So,
we have to put
the first page.
Yeah, first
page,
and then we should.
Which is all the sensor and actuator data.
And that's all I wanted to hear you say.
Okay.
In other words, you've got something intended for completion that you could be reporting on. That doesn't tell me that.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Very good. Any questions? No questions? Yes.
What would you use this for?
Oh.
Is it just experimenting, or does it have like an application?
Okay. Because we are doing this on a device, you know, that QTS device. We don't really know the application the application, but I think because we are controlling the temperature, so any temperature controlling should have the same.
Let me jump in and say it'll probably be used for controlling a chemical reaction.
Right. I was just wondering. I'm not trying to.
Yeah, but we don't know which one. It might be brewing beer or making jet fuel. I don't know. But I think it'll also end up possibly being used in 304. I said that wrong. In 305, for control lab.
What he's talking about is important for you to put into your report because it has an application. That's the question here. What is the application?
Other than passing this course.
Right. you've got a study to characterize a process of thermal transfer. That's what you're talking about. So the point then is, why is it doing this?
Yes. So chemical reactions and the engineering EECS 305 course are probably two main applications. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Oh, you have lots of fans. Oh, exactly. Oh. Okay, thanks. Uh-oh, so that may be an excess number. I put in a couple extras.
One?
Yeah, but you know, that was good. I didn't come in again. Heartbeat. Pacemaker will be next. Pacemaker?
I think he has to save it on his desktop.
Oh,
he
might have to call it.
Alright.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nathan Smith. This is my partner, Dan Zula, and we're working with the Formula FAE team in order to monitor racing tire temperature. We're working with Ken Laparo and working closely with Dan Howe, who you have all met. When we're basically worried about racing tuning, and when a race car goes around a turn, the inside and outside of the tire experience different frictions, spin rate, and therefore the temperature profile is not uniform across the tire. And that is important for in order to tune the suspension properly to get the best traction, you need to have this temperature data to know what happens to the tire. Does it slip on the outside, on the inside, whatever. Well, basically, we're going to provide them with that. As you can see here, this is part of a larger project that includes suspension position, brake temperature, and of course the tire temperature. And you'll see here, this is what we will be doing, just with the tire temperature controller and the pyrometer/thermocouple. Because something that we've done, we've chosen our pyrometers, and technically, they're actually thermocouples, which, Dan, you can explain a little bit more about what that's about.
Yeah, absolutely. As Nate mentioned, we're going to be interfacing with a larger system and we're providing like a larger data logger, the data that we collect. And we want to collect higher temperatures, so you have to do it like in a non-contact form and look at the surface of it. And when we first heard the word pyrometer, we weren't really sure what pyrometer is. But as we dug into it, pyrometer is basically a thermocouple, and it has optics that sense infrared light and just channel it to the thermocouple to get the thermocouple to produce the little millivolt signals. So because they're thermocouples, there's issues that we'll have to work around, and I think we'll get to that later in a little bit. But like, they're not conventional thermocouples. Normal thermocouples usually have an impedance in like the under 1 kilo ohm, but higher than 100 ohms, but up to 1 kilo ohm. These thermocouples have higher impedance, and we'll get to that in a little bit about some of the issues that'll come up with having to interface with thermocouples.
What also we've done is in the tire temperature controller, basically what's going to happen is data is going to come out of the pyrometer slash thermocouple, and it's going to be, the output is a really low signal, like 10 millivolts, which is not sufficient for really doing anything with, especially, you know, when you want to store this data. And so basically what's in this box is what our project is, and it's conditioning the data, going through a PIC microcontroller, doing some A to D conversion, storing the data in a buffer, and then once the... See, there's going to be... Basically, there's going to be two clocks. There's a sampling clock off the pyrometer. This data is going to be stored. Then from the previous other integrated system, there's going to be a data clock that says, give me data, which is going to take the data stored in the controller. Probably going to have some external RAM off the PIC chip. Probably doesn't have enough for what we want to do. So we're going to have some external RAM that is going to then store the data, and then the clock's going to come in. It's like, okay, now we can send the data. It's ready to be accepted. So basically, we've got this microcontroller that we have to program with startup operations, data acquisition operations, and then data sending operations. And we've got a really good development environment, and Dan Howe has really has some excellent tools, not only to develop the programming, but to interface it with the actual chip from a computer. Also, what we've done is Dan has talked to the pyrometer manufacturers. This is where our knowledge of, hey, these really aren't just infrared sensors, they're thermocouples that will lead to the thermocouple issues, and also, you know, just figuring out what's the best for our needs. And we've also, this is an important thing, we determined our goals.
Yes, it is.
Which, in talking with both Professor Leparo and Dan Howe, for two people, this is really a large project. There's a lot of circuit design, there's a lot of programming, so basically our goals are to get one of these things that outputs some sort of data. Not necessarily. Then we'll continue.
You're a nice goal. I'm glad you tied it down.
And then, so we're going to continue this project in the next semester, where we'll condition to get the proper temperature outputs, the proper data, to really get something useful. This is basically just getting the, make sure the wheel spins. Now we want it to actually drive the car.
Okay, so no calibrations.
We'll see, but no.
And so that's what we've done. We talked about what we do. We got to get the control circuitry. We got to get this small signal into something usable. We've got to get an analog signal to something digital. And then what fits also with the thermocouple issues in that Dan will finally talk about.
So a thermocouple puts out like a millivolt signal, and then it's going to be in a really noisy environment. The engine on the formula car is like off a motorcycle, so there's going to be all sorts of EMI that will interfere with our thermocouple issue. We're circumventing some of that by having the tire temperature controller being physically like 1 or 2 inches over the thermocouples. like right on top. Also, other thermocouple issues are that you can't have a lot of leakage current into like your circuitry that is going to read them. So we're going to have to like find really, really good instrumentation amplifiers or use clever circuit tricks like having an adjustable offset to counter like the leakage current issues that would give us erroneous readings off the thermocouples. So there's some of those things. Also, we're going to have to simulate a cold temperature junction that you have to do with all thermocouple circuits. That's just how the nature of how they work. So things like that.
Which is going to be a real pain. Of course, we need to program the microcontroller in, and that it's sort of my genre there, and I've had some experience with some assembly, but that's really something I need to work on, is learning, just basically learning the language and being able to program a stable, fairly complex program into this small chip that requires some elegance to get around. And also, this is a totally different thing. We got to have this circuit board and this PIC. The pins are really small, and they're really close together. And we got to solder this thing onto the circuit board so that the pins don't overlap, so that you've got a good connection there. And that's going to take some time just to be able to physically put it on the board.
Yeah, and since it's going on an actual like an environment with experiences 2 to 3 G's of vibration, i.e. a formula car, you have to make sure your solder joints are good, otherwise stuff will come off. I mean, just a little hairline crack and that little surface mount pin. And
so you have an opportunity for some pretty good contingency planning here, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
And also we need to figure out how we're going to put this on the car. The car is designed to be minimalistic in its nature, and we got to figure out how to put these things above each of the tires so that they won't break off, rattle. They're going to experience some vibrations, and that's not going to snap and get totally toasted once they're by the back tires or flying off the track and stuff, and then all our work is going to make us cry. Any questions?
Yeah, I didn't see a plan.
Yeah, when we found out about this thermocouple thing, our chart is really got to get redesigned. And because that's going to take a lot more work than we thought it was when we made the proposal. So that's got to be, like, redone.
You should have just shown them the plan with redesigned plan.
That's right. That's right.
The original Gantt chart was submitted with the proposal, so...
I know.
We'll get back to you on that.
I know that.
Okay.
Got to come up with a Gantt chart.
But what he just told you is the basis of the whole thing. When you run up against something like this, where you say, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to redo things, you lay in a plan that says I'm going to allot myself this kind of time to redo.
Yep. And that's like fine. A big red block.
Yeah, like the big red block.
That's a perfectly valid thing.
And incidentally, it's also a good idea to reorganize yourself in that when you put the items that you did under the heading of what we did or what we will do, that was really description that should have been at the very beginning. So it sounds to me like what you're really into right now is you're just learning what you want to do with this entire project. And that's okay. Just present it that way.
Okay. Now, I have two technical questions.
Absolutely.
One, you know what a watchdog timer is?
No. Yes.
Okay. Okay. You'll probably want one. Okay?
Yeah.
And the second thing is, how do you know that you need 3 pyrometers?
The width of the tire is about 6.5 inches. Mm-hmm. And when we're doing a profile, we want to, like, we don't want, like, too discrete of a point, but we don't want, like, too broad. Like, since it's rubber, there could be really big, like, jumps in temperature.
Well,
as we
actually, what I was really leading up to, if you study tire engineering and dynamics, it turns out one of the really big things is flexure in the sidewalls generating heat. And I'm wondering if you need sidewall monitoring. By the way, I can put you in touch with a tire design engineer.
Yeah.
If you're interested.
Yeah.
The three pyrometer thing set up basically came just at with the project.
Point.
Just kind of with the project, every drawing, everything has said 3. And the way we had the 3 works very well because we basically have a 3.5-inch windows of viewing on a 6-inch tire.
Okay. Well, let's do one more question and try and get the heartbeat in.
Have you considered using, like, there's a company, Melexis, that has optical pyrometers, like, thermopile-based with built-in, like, signal processing, digital output?
Yeah, we've seen those. They're too big. Mm-hmm. We have seen those. The ones we have are about 2.5 inches
That's
big.
Most, yeah.
Yeah. And about 0.5 inch wide. The ones that have that are, like, 6 inches long, and they're huge. They're just... They, we've seen those things like that.
They should be about like this big. That.
Okay.
No lens, though.
Either that,
kind of dialogue,
that or they're going to be $600 each.
No. Aw. Who cares? Okay. We're going to try and get you in. After all, we're sparing no expenses on that front. Okay, this will probably be the last one. So, everyone else, you can breathe easier. You get to go on Wednesday. And I think that we're meeting our one objective, that you get to see what everyone else is doing. We're starting some dialogue. You know, maybe you can help each other on all your projects. Like I said earlier, I don't care if you all get A's, but I get really upset if you get all D's or worse. So would you. Well, I don't care. I mean, I'll give what people deserve, but I'd like to think that you're all better than a D or an F. Okay, so go ahead.
All right, for those of you who don't know me, my name's Chris Dorr. I'm an electrical engineer, and my partner on this project is David Savins, but he's a biomedical engineer who has class conflicts, so he can't come and do presentations with me. And our technical advisor is Dr. Dominic Durand, who is also in the biomedical engineering department. And our project is a heartbeat-powered pacemaker. So basically, the idea behind our project and what we're trying to do is we're trying to take technology similar. I'm using Seiko's kinetic technology as an example because I think most people are familiar with Seiko kinetic watches and that they operate just off of the motion of your arm, and basically they use like a rechargeable battery in there. And therefore, you don't have to change the battery like you do on normal pacemakers right now. Pacemakers right now are running on mostly lithium iodine batteries, which have a life of about 10 years. It depends on how much defibrillation the patient needs and such. And if a pacemaker battery runs out, well, it notifies the proper people because it has a radio transmitter within it. And then the entire pulse generator unit here, which actually contains all the circuitry and everything for the pacemaker, would have to be replaced. So the goal of our project is to make so that procedure doesn't have to happen anymore. And so we'd like to adapt this sort of technology for that. We want to come up with a prototype, and the prototype would actually be installed over here in the right ventricle on the end of the electrode, which is actually internal to the body and internal to the heart, whereas the pulse generator is external. Now, that is very limiting because we don't have a lot of space there to work with, and the way the electrodes are actually installed is a small little machine actually runs it all the way down the artery here and into there. But this pacemaker has 2 electrodes. Most only have this one down here in the right ventricle. And this is actually a very good spot because, as we researched, there's a lot of motion in that area, and it's very consistent motion, and as long as the patient is alive, then, of course, you're going to have an infinite power source right there for the project. But we know we're limited in the ability to create something that small in one semester, so our prototype is likely going to be larger than that. And then what we're going to do is we're going to use our theoretical calculations from our prototype and then the actual results and use MATLAB Simulink and try to simulate what would happen if we created something of an actually usable size. And then that is how we'll know if our project is a success or not. What we've done so far is we've set out our specifications for power output from what our unit is going to have to do. Basically, I found an article that did research on the batteries that are used right now. And this is what we've come up with to try to duplicate in our design. Basically, the pulse requirement is only about 25 microjoules, so It's not a lot of power, so you're not going to need a whole lot of motion to generate it. Minimal voltage that we're looking for is about 2.2 volts, and the current that the actual pacemaker is going to draw is only going to be about 10 microamps. And a battery has an output impedance at the beginning of its life of about 50 to 100 ohms, so we're looking to duplicate that in our design, but have that be maintained throughout the course of the life of the unit. What we've done is we have to create a device to simulate the actual motion of the heart for our testing. And we've actually already pretty much finalized what our design is going to be, minus a few dimensions that we haven't quite set yet, but we will be this week. And basically, the right ventricle moves in an oval pattern. So we're going to use a small DC motor to drive it, a gear on the shaft of the motor, and then another gear mounted separately with a drive belt running between the two. And then we'll be able to mount our kinetic device onto the drive belt, and that'll simulate the oval motion. And I'm going to also use a potentiometer. That way we can adjust speed and adjust for different paces of heartbeat, etc. And this is our project plan. There's research phases at the beginning, then two concurrent design phases, one for the actual kinetic unit and one for the heart simulator. We're a little behind in the design phase still of the kinetic generator because we're still waiting to... Basically, we have a lot of designs, we just haven't picked our best one yet. And the heart simulator is ahead of schedule, though, because we have a lot of the parts already, and we have the design set. And in the end, we still have room here for our testing. And the fact that we're a little behind on the design of the kinetic generator is not a big deal because we have to spend some time testing the heartbeat simulator first before we can actually start the kinetic test. So we have some time to catch up in there. And that's basically where we're going. Any questions?
Okay. Nicely done.
Yeah, so you can simulate that motion just with basically an eccentric on a motor.
Basically.
Okay, I thought originally you'd have to have like a balloon or something that would
be... Each part of the heart works motions differently, but the bottom of the right ventricle we charted, it is pretty much just an oval pattern.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions?
So someone have to... Are they more tired when you install this thing? Are they like have to have some kind of recovery period? Do they like get used to having this device in the heart? Is it stealing power?
Well, it's not really doing like stealing power from the heart per se. It's because the electrodes are going to be implanted into the heart anyway, and those are what are actually that's pacing the heart.
Like a mask in there, so.
Well, take a look at the energy, because that's really low energy. Hopefully it won't be too bad unless you're at the edge of death anyway. So it's not stealing too much.
So what your prototype is really doing is maintaining the charge in a battery.
Right.
You're not throwing the battery away depending on...
No, it's more like even... Seiko with their kinetic thing, they say they have an energy storage unit, which I think basically is a bigger term for a rechargeable battery.
Mm-hmm. Either that or it could be a super capacitor.
It's pretty much just a battery.
Yeah. The difference between batteries and super caps starts to become fuzzy.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, for everyone with their project plan, I've noticed this on a couple. Putting on the red line or something to indicate where you're at is a really nice little touch. So that, you know, for those of you coming up on Wednesday, just think about that. But that's just a nice little thing. You look at it, and we could have asked for a better textbook example that you're ahead in a couple and behind in a couple, but there's a reason why. So perfect management. Okay. You're off the hook for today. The rest of you will be on Wednesday. And if you have any questions, I'll be in the office tomorrow. Don't forget, by the way, you can sign up on my door for when you will do the laydown briefings with Bob Wirth.